Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from John Russell, Jill Robbins, and Katie Weaver. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and later, Phil Dierking will have this week's education report. But first, did you ever wonder why you have no memory of when you were a baby or very young child? Researchers in the United States are investigating this question. The researchers work at Temple University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The question of why adults do not remember how they learned to walk or talk has long been a mystery. Nora Newcomb is a psychology professor at the university. She joined Zoe Ngo, a Temple graduate student, in the memory research project. Newcomb says, "You know you learned how to walk and talk, but the funny thing is that you don't remember when and how you learned this." The Temple University study involved computer-based tests. The tests were designed to work like games. They were given to 32 four-year-olds, 32 six-year-olds, and 50 young adults. The tests measured the memory process that helps people recognize differences between experiences. For example, a walk with your dog when you saw a friend, and a different walk without your dog or when you did not see your friend. In order to remember those kind of autobiographical events, you need to relate one element to another, Newcomb said. She notes that many people often take walks in a favorite park, but the experience might differ one day from another. Special memory skills are needed to remember when different events happen, like meeting a friend, she said. This differentiation is known as relational memory. This skill would also be important to remembering where you parked your car today, compared to where you left it yesterday or last week. The second test involved showing the test subjects a number of photographs. The children and young adults taking the test were asked to compare the first group of photos with a second set of pictures. Sometimes the two sets of photos were the same, but other times they were different. Remembering differences in objects, such as pictures, is known as pattern separation. The results showed that in both tests, six-year-olds demonstrated far better memory than four-year-olds. The six-year-olds performed about as well as the young adults on the two tests. The two tests suggest that memory skills are more advanced for six-year-olds than four-year-olds. That might help explain why adults do not remember when they learned to walk or talk, but they do remember their third, fourth, or fifth birthdays. We don't have any memories in the first 2 years of life, and all of a sudden we're able to form these memories for specific past events, said Temple graduate student Zoe Ngo. So there must be something going on in early childhood or middle childhood that's very interesting. Newcomb said memory research is important as doctors try to develop a cure for Alzheimer's disease. Persons with the disease suffer memory loss. For some people, memory loss is just for recent events. People may not remember what they did that morning, but remember experiences from 50 years ago. But memory loss research is not limited to helping Alzheimer's patients. It could help with law enforcement officers trying to get more detailed descriptions from witnesses to crimes, Newcomb said. It could also help find ways to get better and more reliable information from young victims of crime, such as child abuse by family members or caregivers.
Venezuelans blocked streets in Caracas Tuesday to protest the president's call for a new constitution. Protesters filled streets with pieces of metal and building materials. Others set fire to small mountains of trash. On Monday, President Nicolas Maduro signed a decree to begin the process of rewriting the Constitution. The declaration orders the formation of a constitutional assembly. In a speech, Maduro said some of the assembly's 500 members would be elected by workers to replace the document. The Venezuelan constitution was last changed in 1999 under the rule of then-president Hugo Chavez. "The day has come, brothers," Maduro said. "Don't fail me now. Don't fail Chavez, and don't fail your motherland." The Associated Press reported his comments. Fewer than half of the assembly's members would be elected, Maduro said. He added that political parties would not be involved. Maduro's opponents and some observers say the measure is part of a plan to postpone elections set for later this year and presidential elections in 2018. Opposition leaders urged Venezuelans to ignore Maduro and to continue the protests that have lasted for more than a month. "We must continue fighting," said Julio Borges, president of the National Assembly. He said Maduro's move was a scam to deceive the Venezuelan people. Borges urged Venezuelans to fill Caracas streets for 2 hours on Tuesday. He called for larger demonstrations on Wednesday. Thousands of Maduro's supporters marched in Caracas on Monday in a show of support for the president. The current political tensions started last July when Venezuela's Supreme Court announced a ruling to cancel the National Assembly's legislative powers. Years of political and economic problems have led to shortages of food, medicine, and other goods. Demonstrators are asking for the return of democratic ideas, including recognizing the National Assembly's decisions, releasing political prisoners, and permitting humanitarian aid. I'm John Russell.
It's time for spring cleaning in Los Angeles. Usually that term relates to housekeeping, throwing away unwanted items, organizing closets, and washing places that have become dirty over the winter. But in this case, we are talking about the massive project of cleaning up the Los Angeles River in Southern California. The river runs about 80 kilometers and passes through 14 cities. It ends at the Pacific Ocean in Long Beach. Usually the riverbed has very little water, but not now. California received record-breaking rainfall over the winter. As a result, the river is full again. All the water has brought plants, animals, and trash. Lots of trash. Plastic bags, paper cups, and even old pieces of furniture found their way into the river. In addition, water wiped out camps on the riverbank where homeless people were living. Now volunteers are working to clean up the mess. Lauren Scott works for the American Chemistry Council. It is a business group. Many of the group's members are companies that produce plastic items for people to use. Some of those items wound up in the river. Along with picking up trash, Scott is trying to figure out what her organization can do to prevent trash from getting into the waterway.
Because, everyone wants a clean river that we can swim and boat and hike in.
Candace Cable was out cleaning up the river, picking up trash from her wheelchair. She is a Paralympic athlete. She is part of a group working to get the 2024 Olympic and Paralympic Games to Los Angeles. She hopes supporters of Los Angeles's efforts to get the Olympics will help clean up the river, too. Christine Lee is a science applications engineer at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, not too far from Los Angeles. She uses satellites to study water quality. She said waterways in cities are important for keeping plants, animals, and people healthy. For example, the Los Angeles River helps control floods and keeps wetlands healthy. Wetlands are home to many important plants and animals. Some people feel like the annual cleanup is already making a difference. Residents are using walking and biking paths along the river more frequently than they used to. Lois Keller, another cleanup volunteer, said,
"It's been really exciting to see the river start to come back."
I'm Jill Robbins.
Scientists and designers in London have found a possible solution to the problem of plastic bottle waste. The group at Skipping Rocks Lab has made a water bottle you can eat. The product is called OHO. Unlike plastic bottles, OHOs are not tall and hard. They look more like bubbles or small, round, clear balls. They can hold liquid inside. People who drink OHOs can be surprised. The outside bursts in the mouth. Rodrigo Garcia Gonzalez is with Skipping Rocks Lab. He explains that the outside, or the membrane of OHO, is made of seaweed, a plant that grows in the ocean.
It's a membrane made of seaweed that can contain water or any kind of liquids. It's made of an extract from the brown seaweed.
The OHO membrane is tasteless, and you can eat it. But the company says Even if you throw away the membrane, it will degrade in about 4 weeks. Gonzalez says the membrane is strong and good for the environment. Every year, billions of plastic water bottles pollute land and waterways around the world. The typical water bottle, made of plastic, can take hundreds of years to degrade. Lise Hansinger is also with Skipping Rocks Lab.
Most people just grab a bottle of water, hold it for 5 minutes, drink it, throw it away. How can that then exist for 700 years? So, yeah, this is absolutely a solution to that. We are very purists. We don't want to see this packaged in plastic. No, this will be served as is, as a packaging.
There are limits to the OHO. It cannot be refilled. Each bottle is small. And OHOs do not store for more than a few days. The Skipping Rocks Lab is working on those issues.
We're still working on things like extending the shelf life, looking at different options in terms of thickness, if we want to make one that stands up more, or more flexible for marathons where people just want to eat it whole.
Right now, Skipping Rocks Lab can make only a few thousand OHOs a day. But it is developing new technology that could increase that number to hundreds of thousands. I'm Katie Weaver.
It was a special show of clothing meets art at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York this week. The yearly event is called the Met Gala. It raises money for the museum's Costume Institute. It also introduces the newest exhibit at the Institute. This year's exhibit and gala honors the work of 74-year-old Japanese clothing designer Rei Kawakubo. She is considered one of the most creative thinkers in the fashion industry. Her line of clothing is called Comme des Garçons. Music star Rihanna wore one of the most dramatic dresses seen at the gala. The Kawakubo piece has layers of material that look like flowers. Model Helen Lazishan wore another design of Kawakubo's. Lazishan is married to singer and producer Pharrell Williams. He talks about the Japanese designer.
Rei is your favorite designer's favorite designer. I mean, like, her abstract way of thinking just continues to influence so many brands. And it's 4 or 5 years later, they'll do something that she's done, you know? And think about it, it's so cool, it's a woman. A woman is a king of fashion.
Singer Katy Perry wore a design created just for her by John Galliano. Actress and singer Jennifer Lopez went for a more traditional look in a dress by Valentino. Another actress and singer, Zendaya, stood out in a dress by Dolce & Gabbana Altamoda. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
This is what's trending today. Jimmy Kimmel tells jokes for a living. He has a popular late-night television show called Jimmy Kimmel Live. He is known for his jokes, silly interviews, and a friendly rivalry with actor Matt Damon. Kimmel was also the host of this year's Academy Awards show, or Oscars. Kimmel usually begins his late-night show by joking about celebrities, current events, and politics. But on Monday night, Kimmel started his show with a story about his newborn son, Billy. Kimmel had not been on TV since his son was born last month. He wanted to tell the audience why. Billy was born with a serious heart problem. The problem prevented his blood from receiving enough oxygen. The baby needed a medical operation to repair a part of his heart. He spent many days in the hospital. But eventually, he came home. Kimmel explained that his son will need another operation on his heart when he gets older. But for now, he is okay. Kimmel almost started crying more than once as he talked about seeing his son in the hospital, surrounded by medical equipment, doctors, and nurses. "It's a terrifying thing," Kimmel said, his voice cracking. "I'm standing in the middle of a lot of very worried-looking people who are trying to figure out what the problem is." Kimmel also brought up the debate in the United States about health care. He said the fact that some politicians proposed major cuts to health care funding, especially funding that goes to research hospitals, is so unbelievably sad. During his campaign last year, President Donald Trump promised to replace the Affordable Care Act. That is the health care law put in place by the administration of former President Barack Obama. Kimmel also said he saw a lot of worried parents at the children's hospital where his son was treated. "No parent should ever have to decide if they can afford to save their child's life. It just shouldn't happen." He asked the politicians, who are meeting to discuss healthcare in Washington, D.C., to stop with the nonsense and take care of each other. The crowd in the studio cheered. People around the world reacted to the emotional video. It became the top-ranked trending video on YouTube. More than 2 million people have watched it so far. Many people wrote comments on YouTube thanking Kimmel for telling his story. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
An arts program is helping students at some of the lowest performing schools in the United States. The program, called Turnaround Arts, aims to help improve low-performing schools by adding music and the arts to the usual study program. Turnaround Arts was launched by Michelle Obama, the wife of former U.S. President Barack Obama. Some money for the program comes from the federal government. For the students at participating schools, the program offers a kind of safe haven from city neighborhoods. Many of the children come from areas with high crime rates. The Turnaround Arts program is part of the curriculum at the Florence Griffith Joyner Elementary School in Los Angeles, California. Test results show the school performed in the lowest 5% in the state. Florence Griffith Joyner serves families from Watts, an area known for gang violence. Akita Kisane Long, the head of the school, says Watts is a difficult neighborhood for students. High crime, high poverty, very multi-generational families in public housing. There's gun violence, she explained. We see a lot of helicopters and we have lockdowns regularly. And so the thing is, all associated with poverty, that really traumatized students. So many of our students come to school with symptoms of post-traumatic stress. Long noted how when she started working at the school 5 years ago, there was willful disobedience, fighting, and destruction of school property. She said there were 267 suspensions on record, as well as 1,167 classroom suspensions. Turnaround Arts is a partnership between the federal government and private businesses. Florence Griffith Joyner Elementary is one of 68 schools in the U.S. participating in the program. Teachers receive special training and look for ways to add music and the arts into all the classes. Turnaround Arts schools partner with musicians and actors who work with the students. Performers have included Yo-Yo Ma, Sarah Jessica Parker, Elton John, and Cameron Diaz. School Principal Long noted, "The children were so excited and have been so excited because it's not just about go to the board, do the problem, turn the page, read the book. It's about acting and impersonating artists and historic figures." She noted how some students got the chance to act out the process of a caterpillar becoming a butterfly. The program has been popular with students too. "I like to act and I like to sing and I like to dance," said 10-year-old Kayla Driacare. Long said that Turnaround Arts is only in its first year at the school, and already teachers are seeing results. "We've probably suspended one kid this year. That's amazing," she said. Parents are getting phone calls to come to Family Arts Night, and it's not just the naughty calls home. It's for them to come and learn more about what their children are learning. So our parent engagement goes up. Around the country, participating schools are reporting fewer disciplinary actions, better attendance, and improved performance in testing. A 3-year-long study found that Turnaround Arts schools performed better than other schools that received special grants for school improvement. The findings come at a time when President Donald Trump is proposing to cut government spending on the arts. Some policymakers are pushing for more attention to subjects like mathematics and science in U.S. education. "Art speaks to everyone," Akita Kisane Long said. "It is part of what makes the curriculum rich and exciting and motivating." At the end of the 3-year program, she wants Los Angeles school officials to make Florence Griffith Joyner Elementary into a magnet school for visual and performing arts. That way, the school could get financing to support its arts programs. I'm Phil Dierking.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.